You don't just throw something in a locker. It has a certain place. His books were arranged by size, largest to smallest. I ambled to my locker with its familiar mess. I was stuffing books into my backpack when Rob slammed his locker door and called out, "Can you swing past my house?" "Sure. Bobster and Coop will be here in a second." "I already told Simon to take them today." We walked to the parking lot in silence and slipped into the bucket seats. Rob waited until I started the motor and pulled out of the lot before he spoke. "I just want you to know that I appreciate your giving Rana to Simon." "Dead issue, Rob." "That was just because of the Debbie thing. She'll come around after the dance. I'll take care of it." "Whatever. You really came through for me." I didn't say anything. The radio took up the slack. If I had given up so much for Rob, I needed him to give me something back. I wanted him to tell me his secret. "Rob, where's your dad?" Flicking his eyes to the side, Rob covered his surprise as he sized me up. "What makes you ask that?" "I'm not sure. We all gripe about our dads on a more or less daily basis. You've never mentioned yours." "Is it important? Are your parents checking my pedigree?" "Forget it." Rob stared out the window while the soft, slow, golden oldie oozed out of the speakers. He died. His voice startled me. I was lost for a minute, then I honed back in. "Your dad?" "Yeah. When I was 11. I kept my eyes on the road. He was the best. Absolutely the best. I worshipped him. Wanted to be just like him. Wanted him to be proud of me. He was smart and fun. He took me camping. Taught me to shoot a rifle. Played ball with me, the works, you know? And when he..." Rob seemed to bite back a word, change it to a safer one. "When he died, I remember thinking, how could he do that to me?" With obvious effort, he laughed. "Stupid, right?" I let it go. He wasn't ready. Chapter 24. Nobody ever questioned my ACTs. But I took them again. I couldn't right all the wrongs, but I could do that much. Did you know that Rana came to the hospital every single day? And she did something great. She convinced me that I was more than muscle and sweat, and she taught me how to learn. I didn't graduate with everyone else, but when I finished all my classwork and was walking on my own again, Rana had a surprise. She got the deputy to light up the stadium one night. I wore a cap and gown, and lots of people came and cheered while the principal gave me my diploma. Jeff Cooper. Per Dad's rule, I had to take the ACT again. So I ended up in Simon Glass's Firebird early Saturday morning en route to Alvin Community College. "Glass, you know you have to sign the test, and they have a copy of Coop's first test with a signature." Tapping his fingers on the steering wheel to an inner rhythm, Simon nodded. "Got that covered. Coop made a 15. If I don't score better than, say, a 20 or 21, then the computer won't kick out the score, so the signature won't be compared. But just in case, I worked on forging Coop's handwriting last night." When we arrived at the college, we showed our IDs, took our places, and waded into the test. I didn't need a replay of my dad's wrath. I was tired and grumpy when we finished. Simon wanted to stop for burgers, but I talked him into Mexican food. Chowing down on tacos, quesadillas, enchiladas, rice, and beans was a proven mood elevator. "Are you still dating Debbie?" Simon caught me with a mouthful of taco. I chewed. Slow. Giving myself some time, I swallowed and took a slug of iced tea. Why are you asking? Simon rearranged things on his plate. His eyes averted, he said, Rana asked me. Now I poked at my food. Oh. Who are you taking to the favorites dance? He said it in a rush, exhaling the words almost inaudibly. He was asking my permission to take Rana to the dance. I didn't know what to do with that. It pissed me off, but the truth popped out before I could stop it. I don't know. I might not go. You have to go. I don't have to do anything. But you're nominated. You'll win. There was something about the way he said that, as if it were a foregone conclusion, that set off tiny alarms deep in my head. But the anger at telling me what to do took over. So what? So, won't your parents care if you won and weren't there to accept? The taco shell snapped in my grasp and the contents cascaded to the plate. Cut the crap, Glass. You want to ask Rana to the dance and you're afraid I'm an obstacle. Glass wouldn't look at me. He kept pushing his food around. I let him squirm. Finally, well, rest easy. I'm not going to ask her. I could feel rather than hear Simon's sigh of relief. Only because she wouldn't accept, I added. Simon looked up, bright-eyed as a chipmunk. Do you think she'd go with me? We looked at each other and then away. We nosed down our food, the silence interrupted only by the piped-in mariachi-slash-elevator music version of Margaritaville. Yeah. I think she would, I said. The ride home was predictably grim, but when Glass dropped me off at my house, I raced inside, got my mother's bird-watching binoculars, hopped into my car, and followed him. I hung back so he couldn't spot me. He went home. I parked one street over where I could see his driveway from a spot between two houses. He reappeared in about 20 minutes, shined and polished. He had changed his clothes and probably showered because the binoculars revealed damp comb tracks in his hair. I would have bet big money that he reeked of manly cologne. I let him pull out, travel the street, and turn the corner before I trailed him again. He took the long way to town, around the lake, back to the highway, then the overpass by the mall, and finally hung a right that took him downtown. He turned in at the florist. I parked next door at the Sonic, ordering a Coke to justify my presence. I was counting out change to the car hop when Glass emerged, carrying a long-stemmed rose. The rose was a delicate shade of pink, like a peach that was blushing. No common red rose for Simon Glass. I'd never sent Rana flowers. Kicking someone else's ass feels so much better than kicking your own, and I wish that I could run over Glass right there in the street. I can imagine how satisfying it would feel when his body thudded against the bumper. I could visualize him broken and bleeding on the pavement, his oh-so-perfect rose smashed and ruined beside him. As I watched him climb back into his car, safe from my murderous thoughts, I pondered how it must feel to let loose, to allow the darkness trapped inside you out to run rampant. The ice in my Coke was melting, turning the drink watery. I let Simon drive away. I knew where he was going. Tossing the drink out, I cranked the engine and drove to Rana's. I parked at the end of the street and trained the binoculars on them. They sat in the swing on the big wraparound porch. Rana held the rose. She was smiling. Chapter 25. Coop was a terrific athlete. He had a future, that one. It was like somebody gut-shot me when I saw the damage done to that kid's body. I was there when the doc told Coop he'd have to have an artificial knee. Coop knew that football in college was a thing of his past. I admit I didn't keep up with him much. I knew he went to junior college here. You could have knocked me down with a feather when he came by asking for a reference. His face isn't the same. Even with the plastic surgery, when he smiles, he looks a little lopsided. It makes him look older. But not old. He'd finished school and had an interview coming up. To teach fourth grade. Coach Larry Gavin. Friday, February 8th, Coop signed on the dotted line. Coach Gavin had a ceremony in his office. Coop stood between Coach and the TCU rep. Local sports reporters recorded the occasion. Simon pulled in a 21 on the test. The computer hadn't flagged his score, and Coop's future seemed assured. Bobster, Rob, Simon, and I were allowed to witness the signing. We clapped and cheered as Coop shook hands with a rep and grabbed Coach Gavin in a bear hug. He thanked Coach about 10 times as he hammered the poor guy on the back. He bolted over to us, waving the pen. "They let me keep the pen I signed with," he said. "Coop, it costs about 29 cents, Bobster said. "Wrong, Bob. This is a magic pen." "Yeah, Bob, that pen is worth 4 free years at TCU, Rob said as he beamed at Coop. "Congrats. You deserve it." Coop nodded to Simon. Couldn't have done it without the glass man. Simon thrust a stack of papers at Coop. "For you, big guy." Coop took the papers and read the top sheet. He shook his head. "You're too much, Simon. Hand them out to whoever you want. I'll make more if you need them." "Thanks. Guess I should start right here." He shoved a paper at each of us. It was a flyer with "It's a Party" marching across a banner. Underneath, a cartoon depicted Coop wearing a crown. Next to that was a frog, a crown hanging crookedly from horns sprouting from its head. The caption read, "This time the prince becomes a frog." Below was an invitation to celebrate with Coop at a party Saturday afternoon. It offered burgers and beer from 2 p.m. until 2 a.m. at the home of Simon Glass. "Great idea, Glass," Bobster said. "And it sure doesn't hurt your chances for class favorite, does it?" I added. Rob turned to me. "Actually, it was my idea, Young. It will get Simon some votes, sure, but you don't have to ruin it for Coop." He paused. "Or me." I glanced up and saw Coop posing for the sports photojournalist. Coop was flying high, released from the cage he had been born into. "You're right, Rob. I'm shutting up." Coop waved Simon over and showed him the signed agreement and handed the coach and the rep one of the flyers for his party. Coach read it and laughed. "I'll be glad to be there, Coop, but I'll call first so you can hide the beer." I dressed carefully for the party, even washing my hair twice, trying to get that casual, tousled look. I got there just after 2, and the place was already crowded and cranked up. I saw Coop outside, shoveling a hamburger patty from the grill onto Coach Gavin's plate. No beer was in sight. Simon guided partygoers around a long table piled with burger fixings, beans, chips, and a huge cake decorated in TCU's colors of blue, white, and gray. Blue letters proclaimed, "To make him a frog, you gotta kiss the prince." Sarah Branston and Amy Lawson pointed at the cake, giggled, and rushed to plant wet ones on Coop's cheeks. Bobster waved me over. "Can you believe this shit? He talked his parents into going out of town for the weekend, and Glass got the housekeeper to come in today and again tomorrow to clean up. Does he have the life or what?" "I've met his parents," I said. "I'll take the or what." Bobster looked perplexed, but his deep thought fled as he caught sight of Ginger Donaldson. "See you, buddy." He dodged through the crowd, shouting, "Back, girls! Don't fight! One at a time! One at a time!" He was a reasonable facsimile of his old self. Coach Gavin had finished his burger and was saying goodbye, shaking hands with members of his football team. The kegs were wheeled in as his car pulled out. The party pumped up the volume and the crowd brought out my post-Rana fun phobia. I flashed the high sign to Coop, pushed my way into the kitchen, scooted around the corner and into Simon's study. I stepped in with my back to the interior of the dim, quiet room, pulling the door shut. When I turned, I saw her, curled up at one end of the sofa. "Rana?" I whispered. "What's a guy like you doing in a place like this?" I noticed that she didn't say "nice guy." "Just lucky, I guess." She gave a barely perceptible nod. "Mind if I stay?" I asked. Looking to her left, she stretched out her hand and twisted a plastic rod. The mini blinds opened slightly, allowing slats of light to dart across the shadows. "Why not?" she said, almost to herself. I sat down, uncomfortable and tense. I couldn't find a place for my hands, which had become huge and cumbersome, as if encased in boxing gloves. I sighed. "I've taken to driving past your house just to watch the light in your window." "I know." My tongue turned to sand. "You saw me?" "No, the neighbors did. They took the number off your license plates and called Dad." Not only did Rana know the pathetically desperate lengths to which I'd gone, her parents and neighbors did too. I knew now how Dallas Alice, Lance, and even Simon felt to be an object of derision. "There's not much I can say," I finally croaked. We sat in silence, not looking at each other. I watched the dust motes dancing in the filtered beams. When she spoke, it startled me. "It doesn't change anything. But I miss you too." She said it like she was ashamed. And something inside me broke apart and splintered. "There's no going back, is there, Ron?" She rubbed her fists at her eyes like a sad child. "I wish I wouldn't cry all the time," she said. I sat next to her and slid my arm around her shoulders. She leaned against me, snugging her face into my neck. Knowing with a resigned certainty that Rana was only seeking a temporary safe harbor, I did no more than stroke her cheek with my fingertips. She sighed and pulled away, rubbing her temples with the heels of her hands. "My head is smart, but my heart is stupid." Her words drifted in the silence. "And you'll listen to your head?" "Yeah," she murmured. "I've done a lot of thinking. A lot of talking with Dad. I've even seen a shrink a few times." I didn't know what to do with this. "There's just something..." She trailed off. "Missing in you. And I think it's something that will get more and more important." "What is it?" She touched my lips with trembling fingers. "You're everybody's idea of a good guy. But you're not good because of any convictions or moral compass. You're good because you don't say no. You do as you're told, and so far nobody told you to do anything wrong." She pulled her fingers away. "But someday, someone will." I stood and paced. I needed to pound the pillow in my room. "Ron, grow up. Everybody keeps telling me that I'm a sheep. Look in the mirror. Are you wearing comfortable pajamas at this party? No. Why? Because the magazines and other people tell you what to wear." Rana turned her face to the window. I paced again. "Bob doesn't buy a pair of sunglasses unless the hunk of the month is wearing them. Radio talk shows are a dime a dozen because people call in so somebody else will tell them what to do. Movies tell us how skinny to be, and the television tells us which toilet paper to wipe our ass with. And everybody listens. You're even listening to your shrink instead of your heart. I stopped, my anger ebbing to a plea. Why do you have to make me the sinner because I follow instead of lead? I wound down. Flashed and burned, I sank down next to her, my elbows on my knees, my head in my hands. I cried. Right in front of her, I cried. Rana said nothing and didn't move. When I finished and wiped my eyes with the back of my fists, she turned toward me. Leaning forward, she kissed me. A kiss as delicate and